Listening to Happy to Help on Hunterdon and Chamber Radio. We are on Facebook Live today if you'd like to tune in and check us out at Happy Hunterdon or look up Happy to Help. And today we're talking with Larry O'Donnell, who is a self-proclaimed dumpster diving diva. Welcome, Larry.
Thank you, Nicole. I'm delighted to be here.
It's so fun to have you, and you've got an incredible story. So why don't you start out by just telling us a little bit about your background, 40 years in telecom, right? And
yes.
And how you ended up being a dumpster diving diva.
Well, I started with AT&T and went through divestiture and the various iterations and retired with 40 years with Ericsson. As it turned out, we were Ericsson. I also was an adjunct faculty member at Fairleigh Dickinson University. I've been there for 20 years doing management classes and overseeing the interns for management and marketing. And I've been dumpster diving for decades,
I love it.
When I noticed people were leaving the company, there'd often be a big red dumpster outside of their office, and I would peek in and look over the edge, and there'd be lots of cool stuff in there, hole punches, staplers, scissors, you name it. So I started pulling it out, and I had a friend who had retired and become a teacher in North Plainfield High School, and so I was giving the things to her, and she'd share things with the faculty there and the students, and so things weren't going to waste. So I've been doing that for decades.
Good for you. Go ahead. And then I think the building was closing. Ericsson was closing a building in Piscataway.
Well, so what happened was when Ericsson bought the facility that we work in, so the facility has almost 1 million square feet, 6 different buildings that are interconnected. And when they bought us, people were sort of spread out through the various buildings. And they said, well, we're going to consolidate everybody, and we're going to renovate one of the buildings. The building had 3 stories, hundreds of offices, a couple hundred thousand square feet. And they said, so we're going to move everybody out who's in there, and we'd like you to clean out your offices, because when you come back, basically you're going to be working in a paperless environment. You won't have a printer on every desk. You won't have file cabinets. You won't have bookcases. You'll have a workstation and a trolley that will hold perhaps 2 bags worth of stuff. So we encourage you to clean things out. So when I heard that, I contacted a friend to say, what are we going to do with all this stuff? Because people's offices were full of things.
Binders. Did you say like 30 years of supplies or something like that?
Some people had been in their jobs for 30 and 40 years, so mm-hmm. their offices had things, and it's a software business, so you kept all your release information in binders and files. And so I called a friend to say, what's going to happen with all this stuff? And she said, oh, we're going to recycle it. I said, perfect. So they rolled out the dumpsters on a Friday, and by Tuesday, they were overflowing with stuff, everything, good stuff, stuff that should get thrown out was just all there. And so I called her back, and I said, Roseanne, that's not what's happening. And she said, oh, you have to talk to this other lady, Liz. She called me, too. The two of you should get together. So Liz Holcomb and I, met over a dumpster, and we decided we were going to start pulling things out. We were going to save them. And within a few days, we realized we couldn't possibly do it all ourselves because it was enormous. 3 stories, 200-plus thousand square feet, hundreds of offices. So we decided to reach out to the pioneers and the facilities team at Ericsson and basically pull together a volunteer team of people who would collect and donate, organize the supplies. Facilities team provided us with boxes. They set up rooms for us to put things in. We asked employees to put their things in the rooms if they wanted to, but they weren't required to. And so we started to collect things.
Nice.
So yeah, that's how it all started.
Yeah, and that's incredible. And so maybe we should mention quickly, the Pioneers is kind of a volunteer organization that started through AT&T along
decades
telecom.
Ago. At the beginning of the, quote, Bell system, okay. They realized that people worked together. There was a lot of fellowship going on. And so they formed this nonprofit organization for people to do things for their community together.
Right. So you had a good resource pool to pull from, right?
Yes.
Good. And then it just took you and Liz hooking up and realizing that somebody needed to organize this, and you decided you guys were going to do it.
Yes. So we did it.
Good. And so it started with organizing, and then people got into it, and then you so what year was this when they decided to?
This was 2013.
Okay.
And so as we started to collect things, I mean, rooms were filling up. They filled up close to the ceiling just about with stuff, and people just started throwing things in because there was so much stuff. So then we started to organize it. We set up other rooms where we could sort things and organize them. And then I had this panic moment. Does anybody want this stuff?
Right.
Because now we have all this stuff. And so we put together an order form, and we started to do some outreach. We sent it out to the employees to let them know to send it out to schools, any legitimate nonprofit. And we started to collect the order forms and fill the orders. And through networking, I mean, we have reached organizations in New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Haiti, Belize, Puerto Rico, and Liberia.
Wow.
And so, and that was all through networking, yep, talking to people.
Never underestimate the power of networking,
exactly.
Right? Yeah, so it's like-minded people doing good things. And so, and you even, I was so impressed when you're like, we've got a catalog and you can look at the pictures. And I was like, wow, this is impressive.
Well, we first started with office supplies. Okay. And so we emptied the one building, they renovated it. And then everybody who had now been in another building, a 12-story building, with, I forget how many hundred thousand square feet, now that building was full of stuff that people either left behind,
right,
or we started the same collection process. We learned some things.
Yeah.
We put advertisements on the back of the restroom doors and all over the building, created three-dimensional posters with examples of the stuff that we could donate, and set up boxes to start to collect, set up rooms again. I had a team of people. Somebody volunteered for each floor, so we would get together weekly to say, how are you doing? Do you need help? Move the resources around to collect, and then, again, start with the donations.
Yeah, that's incredible, because I think a lot of people want to help. They just need to be told what to do.
Yes.
So when you make it easy, then that just, it all kind of comes together. But it takes someone who has the gumption and the organization and the vision to just get it going.
It was an amazing experience. And all through this too, people were getting laid off. But they found that it was really something very rewarding to do in a time that was tough for them personally. And so they were collecting and organizing and donating things themselves.
They had a purpose, right?
Yes, they did.
Totally. And this has not been all for naught, because you've helped so many people and you've won quite a few awards. So I think the biggest one is the New Jersey Governor's Award for Environmental Excellence that you received in 2018.
Yes, we got that one last fall. We're very excited about that.
And that is also a testament to your perseverance, because you said you had to apply several times to get it. I'm sure it just depends on your competition and things, right?
Yes, yes. And so I decided that this time it was, because each time we did it, we continued to collect and donate, so our numbers continue to go up,
right.
What we had done continued to go up, to increase, and so I decided this was either three strikes and you're out, or three times and it's a charm.
Right.
So it worked.
Yeah, so I think phase one, you said 126 nonprofits you helped with 72 tons of equipment, so you started with binders and different things, and I think microwaves and file cabinets. And
yes, because people had everything in their offices. This was like a second home for many people.
Exactly.
They had microwaves. They had refrigerators.
Like a college dorm.
It was. I mean, when people started with the Bell System, they were often there for life.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. And you said you had a career there for 40 years,
yes,
which is going to be unheard of for the millennials today. But it's just a different era, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you went through many iterations, as you said, with the Bell Company. So, yeah. You've up to phase five. Are you still in phase five, or have you gone beyond phase five?
Well, this is 2019, so we might be in phase six at this point, because now what's happened is we went from office supplies, and then we got the word from the facilities folks that you can donate furniture. And so we've been donating furniture from the 12-story building. We donated over 400 tons of furniture. And supplies and equipment. And then, so we got through a lot of the furniture there, donated a lot of it. The rest was either scrapped or went to scrap metal. Mm-hmm. And then there was another building that was vacated, so we've been working on that one, and all of the furniture is being donated.
Wow.
Everything. Right now there are 20-some tractor trailer loads of furniture waiting for a veterans organization. They're taking it, and they're going to put it in warehouses, and different schools and municipalities are going to take the furniture. So that's we're really incredible. Excited about that.
Yeah. No, that, I mean, that it's just repurposing things and having a funnel or a gateway to spread it out and yes. through the connection. So yeah, yes. that's incredible. All right. Well, we'll take a quick commercial break and then we'll be back.
Advancing Hunterdon is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterdon County's businesses. Advancing Hunterdon engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon, a roadmap for economic growth for the business community of Hunterdon. You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
This is Tony Clark, para planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
This is Nicole Smith. You're listening to Happy to Help on Hunterdon Chamber Radio. We're on Facebook Live today at Happy Hunterdon. And we're talking with Larry O'Donnell. She was a product manager with Ericsson and umpteen telecom companies before that for 40 years. She's also an adjunct faculty member at Fairleigh Dickinson University. And she's a dumpster diving diva, and she says she has a trash passion. So, and we're very happy that she does because she saved tons and tons and tons of office furniture and filing cabinets and materials from the landfill and has organized and disseminated them and offered them out to tons of nonprofits in the area. And that's what this show is all about, is Happy to Help and how good it makes you feel when you're helping others and it gives you a purpose. And volunteering, I talk about how volunteering enables you to connect with people you might not otherwise connect with and gives you a sense of community and a sense of purpose. And so Larry, through her efforts, has closely worked with over 125 volunteers over the past 5 years, collecting and organizing all of these this office furniture and helping many nonprofits in the process. And you want to talk about the volunteer team and some of those members and how much difference they've made?
Sure. So, as Nicole mentioned, over 125 people volunteered their time over the course of the past 5 years. This started in 2013, so I guess now it's 6 years.
Oh, yeah.
Now it's 6 years. And we started out with a handful of people, but as they saw other people volunteering, more and more people volunteered. In fact, some people didn't want to clean out their offices because they weren't required. They said, oh, facilities, we'll just throw everything away. But one guy said to me, well, I cleaned my office out because I saw you doing it. And it's interesting to watch the evolution of volunteerism because there were some people, there were some managers who said, my people shouldn't have to do this. Facilities should do this. That was part of the mindset because it wasn't mandatory to clean things out. But they turned around. I said, not a problem. I'll clean out the offices. I have other folks who will. And they turned around because they saw other people volunteering and they set up boxes, and they became a role model for organizations and how to get the offices cleaned out, get the supplies collected, and ultimately get them donated. So it was really interesting to watch that. It was also interesting the power of networking and just talking to people. Because as I mentioned before, I remembered when I started collecting all this stuff and I saw how much we had, I started to panic. Who's going to want all this
overwhelming
stuff,
yeah.
Right? So I just started talking to people. I was having lunch with a colleague and his wife at their home in Flemington and mentioned all this stuff that we had. And did they know of anybody? Well, as it turns out, this gentleman's sister-in-law was a doctor from Haiti. And she had come here as a child, become a podiatrist, and wasn't going to go back to Haiti until they had the earthquake. And then she went back and realized she needed to help. So she started a nonprofit in Haiti, the Kindest Hearts Foundation. And she built a school and a clinic and a children's home. And so she was just in the beginning of building the school when I asked whether, you know, they needed anything. And we supplied them with hundreds of binders and all sorts of office supplies, equipment, printers. We sent, I want to say 75 or 80 laptops went to Haiti.
Did they go in a container or something? Because shipping's the big problem, right?
Yes, shipping. Yeah. So the Kindest Hearts Foundation is based, or was based, in Long Island.
Okay.
So it meant getting things from Piscataway to Long Island, and then from Long Island into a container into Haiti.
Oh, wow.
So she had some folks who came out and picked things up, picked up whiteboards and a variety of things. But over time, those folks moved, and she didn't have access to them anymore.
Okay.
So a friend and I at work, we also collected comforters to go to Haiti.
Oh.
You wouldn't think they'd need comforters
in Haiti.
I was
going to say, it's kind of tropical.
It's a hot climate, right? However, comforters are called sweet sleep in Haiti because children sleep on the floor.
Oh.
And so they use a comforter in lieu of a mattress.
Okay.
So my friend and I started a collection at work. Her daughter also did a collection at some of the local stores in Hillsborough where they live. We had over 200 comforters, and we had all the laptops and a bunch of supplies. And we took, my husband and I rented a trailer. Our friend had a minivan. We loaded everything up, and we took everything out to Long Island to leave there so they could then get it to Haiti.
Wow.
So that was really...
And then was she there on the other end to accept it? Because, I mean, a lot of times you have to kind of see it, soup to nuts, get to where it's supposed to go.
She got it shipped out.
Yeah, because she spoke the language and she knew the landscape.
Oh, yes.
And she
had the connections to get it in.
Perfect.
Part of the dilemma nonprofits have that are overseas, some of them are taxed very heavily. And so to take things in becomes a financial burden in addition to the shipping.
Yeah.
We also made a connection through networking with a gentleman who is starting the first library in Liberia. In Liberia, they have like 4 million people. They've been at war for 15 years, mm-hmm. and they don't even have one library.
Wow.
So we've been working with a gentleman, Zazi Kapidath, who is with Project Refuge International.
Okay.
And he's taken hundreds of chairs, and we've got some things for him now. He's gotten equipment, laptops, and...
Wonderful.
He's shipping them to Liberia.
Okay, that's great. I know that there was a woman in Bernardsville that had a nonprofit in Liberia. She was really well known, Katie Myler, because she started, More Than Me. Yeah, and so she had done a girls' school and some different things, but I didn't know there weren't any libraries, because Liberia is named, I think, primarily after the United States and Liberty. That's how they got their name. Yeah. So it's a lot of connections there. So good.
Interesting.
That's exciting.
Yes. Yeah.
So you've reached out nationally, locally, tri-state area, and then internationally and helped people.
Yes.
Yeah, that's incredible. And what was I going to ask? So the volunteers, you've just collected people just from one person tells another person, and oh, I know this guy and he has a truck and, you know, right? It just grows and grows and grows.
Yes. And all the volunteers were basically employees and retirees, members of the Pioneers, and they would help each other. And so it was really nice team effort. I mean, we had teams that got together. Erickson has volunteer hours, so people could use their 8 hours of volunteer time to come and collect and organize supplies. They also let teams volunteer their hours, so we had teams who came and said, do have a room that needs to be cleaned out. I had a giant file room with, I don't know, 30 or 40 file cabinets and full of binders. And so they, as a group, got together and used their 8 hours, their team hours, to clean out the supplies in there that were donatable and put, like, the proprietary information into the special bins. Mm-hmm. So it's just feels really good to see that, especially people hate to see things thrown away.
I know, right? Yeah. Oh, you had a story about the trash cans, the blue trash cans, right?
Oh, the blue trash cans. So every desk had two trash cans, one, a blue one for recycling and a gray one. And so we had thousands of trash cans. And so Haiti, there aren't any trash cans in Haiti. People had never seen them. So,
well, because they basically live in trash, right? I mean, isn't that the slums? I don't know. Not everybody.
I don't know.
Okay.
You know, I don't know. So I don't know whether they don't have much trash because they don't have a lot. Like, we have a lot of packaging and stuff. So maybe they don't have as much trash. I really don't know. But they have never had any. And so somebody stole one of the trash cans. And Patricia Nicholas, who's the head of the Kindest Hearts Foundation, the doctor, she said, not a problem. We'll be able to find the trash can because nobody else has one in the village. So, but it's hard to imagine the things that people don't have. We are so blessed in this country with everything that we have. When you hear that there isn't a library for 4 million people, that people have never seen a trash can.
Yeah.
So it's amazing the things that you learn. And I've, you know, have a greater appreciation than ever for what we have been fortunate enough to have here in the United States.
Yeah, it gives you perspective, right? You know,
it's
hard to complain when you're dealing with stuff like that,
yes,
right?
Yes.
And then I thought it was interesting how you said people were like, "Well, facilities should do that." And it's funny how your biggest detractors can turn into your best role models, right?
Yes.
And that's got to be gratifying too.
It is, just to see how, instead of forcing people and getting upset with them, I was like, okay, that's, you don't have to do that. We'll find somebody else. I'll do it. And then people start to think and turn their position around.
That's
so
right. Kill them with kindness.
Yeah.
And example. You lead by example, right? That's the easiest way to go, is to convince somebody. It's like, well, I'm doing it. You know, it's not below me, beneath me to do this because I'm in it. I'm invested. And look how much fun I'm having, right?
Exactly.
Well, the other awards that you've gotten, you've got, you were published in the Catholic Spirit and the Diocese of Metuchen, which was then carried over to the National Catholic Newsletter.
Yes.
So your good deeds are rooted in faith, which is great, right?
Well, yes, because if you read the Pope's encyclical, I mean, this is right in line with that. You know, it's caring for the earth, not wasting resources, not dumping things into a landfill. And it's caring for people. And so to see things that are useful and that you know other people can use, and then just throw them out, it sort of feels like, let them eat cake. Let them figure it out. And I'm like, no. We have enough problems. You know, we got environmental issues. We got conservation issues. Mm-hmm. So why not try and make the most out of what we have and keep it going and reuse? I've learned some of the recycling lingo or environmental lingo, that it's reuse when you don't grind it up and recycle it into something else.
Well, then there's upcycle, right? I don't know exactly what that is, but I think you kind of create a new life for something as well, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And then you also won the Great Oak Award in 2016, which is New Jersey Monthly's award for philanthropy.
Yes.
Right.
That was the first award we got. I was sitting in the dentist's office waiting and reading the New Jersey Monthly magazine, and I saw this award, and I thought, you know, I'm going to apply for that.
Good for you.
And I did, and we won.
Nice.
Which was very exciting. That was the first award that we got. And then the second award, I was given an award by the Kindest Hearts Foundation, which was a big surprise to me.
Aww.
So that was really very nice. And then we won the highest national award that you can win, which is the EPA award for Region 2.
Wow.
And so that's for New York, New Jersey, the U.S. Virgin Islands, Puerto Rico, and the 8 Indian nations. So we won that.
Wow.
And I may apply for that again because that didn't include furniture. That was before the furniture. So I may apply for that. We'll see how that goes.
And where do they have that ceremony? Do they have it in
New York City?
Oh, that's
in
exciting.
In New York City at the EPA headquarters.
Wow.
There. And then I applied for the New Jersey Recycling Award, and we won that last year.
He was racking them up. I love it.
And it wasn't to get the awards. It was to get companies to see that there's something you can do with things, because as you downsize, reorganize, change office. A lot of companies are changing their office space to open space and doing away with the traditional offices and desks and things. There's a lot of stuff there. Yeah. And you can do something with it. And it's not a technical problem. It's a problem of the will. Do you have the will to do the right thing with stuff?
Yeah.
In fact, I made a presentation at a CoreNet meeting recently, which is an organization of facilities managers, architects, real estate executives. And was interesting because the architect, there was a gentleman there who was an architect, and he said, we're always looking sort of ahead at how you're redesigning buildings and planning for that. He said, we never really have thought about looking behind us to say what's happening with what was there before. Mm. So it was an eye-opener for him that maybe they should try and do something with that. So
yeah,
that was interesting. Trying to spread the word that this can be done. It's not hard to do. It just takes some time.
Yeah, I think corporate America created a whole group of hoarders, right? not intentionally, but, you know.
Easy. Well, the nature of some businesses is that you need to keep things, you know, for tax purposes or for referencing. And so there's a lot of stuff.
Yes, and I know some consultants who purposely shred everything because they don't want, you know, it's like, oh, no, I never said. I mean, you know, some people shred everything because they just don't want any, you know, evidence, and other people save things. But like you said, with software and stuff and binders and tech guides and stuff, it was just, that's what you did, right?
It was
for reference before everything was online and so easily available, because we try and remind people there was a time before the internet, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Well, let's segue a little bit into your adjunct faculty position, because I'm always curious as to what is your take on the next generation coming up and maybe deal with millennials or who you deal with, and what is your take on what their perspective is and how they think and how they act and the future of corporate America or society in general?
Well, I have to say, the students with whom I work, I tell them this, I have great hope for the future, because I see that they're hardworking, they're interested, they're learning. They bring new insights to things, and so I am very optimistic about that. Now, I think when they hit the real world, in some cases they're overly optimistic. They think they're going to make big money.
Yeah.
And I've talked with former students who've left and graduated, and they said one of their shockers was that you're not going to get a big salary. You're going to start at an entry-level position, and you need to take what you can get. And don't think you're going to get $100,000 or even $60,000. Now, some will, but some won't. And you just have to be open to taking a position and doing the work and working hard. And it's very interesting. But I'm optimistic about them, because I think they're very energetic.
Right. Well, how do you go about mentoring? How does some of those sessions go? Or are you assigned a mentor? Or do you just offer your mentorship up to different people? Or
so at Fairleigh, we have internships that are for credit. For 3 credits. Most schools have that.
Oh, nice.
You can do an internship for no credit, or if you do an internship, for credit, you need to have some academic assignments. It can't just be a part-time job, but you have to have something to go with it. And so when I started doing this about close to 20 years ago, the person who had done it before said, oh, you just have them write a journal. Well, I could see they didn't know what to write. It was like, what do you write? So I have them write memos, and they have questions about the company in which they're working that ties to what they've been learning. Like, the first memo focuses on what's the company's vision, what's its mission, what are its strategies, what are its objectives, to give them the big picture. And then we migrate down, talk about how is the company organized. And so there are questions about organization. And then there are questions about innovation. And so each memo focuses on something different in the company, gives them the opportunity to network, to have conversations that they wouldn't otherwise have. It's an excuse. Well, I have to do this for school.
Perfect.
So, and found that the supervisors and managers are very open to that, and working with the students and answering questions. And the feedback I get consistently is, I've had conversations I would never have had. I learned things that I wouldn't have learned before. So they find that writing the memos and answering the questions is very interesting and worthwhile.
That's great, because they get a chance to see other part. It's not just their little tiny job, and, you know, they're part of a bigger group, right? The company, right?
If it's a large organization. Yeah. If it's a small company where there's maybe 2 or 3 or 4 people, you're having a conversation with probably your supervisor. Mm-hmm. But what we've found there too is by asking the question, sometimes the entrepreneur will say, you know, I didn't think about that. I've got it in my head. I need to put that down in writing so people know what our mission is.
Oh, that's good.
It's been good. It makes the student look good too, because they're asking these questions about the business and how the business operates.
Right. And so is it a template that you give them when they go on their...
The syllabus, I outline all the questions and a schedule. Here's memo one. Here are the questions you have to answer. And each memo has a section on the company with company questions.
Okay.
And then they have to set up Google Alerts to look for two articles, one on the industry or the company or a competitor. They're looking for a current event and summarize that.
Wow.
Another is on finding a job, writing resumes. So that changes. And then they have a self-reflection. Pick one thing you worked on this week, and what was the business purpose of it? What did you do? What value did it provide? And then what did you do well, and what should you change to get them in the habit of constantly reflecting and self-improvement?
Right. So, that's good. Yeah, not just do the task. Actually think about it. Think about why and how and when and, taking it farther. So that's good.
Yeah.
It was funny because my daughter was working on something or contacting someone, and they said, send me a Google invite, and she didn't know what that was. I'm like, how can you in the technology age not know what that is? I barely know what it is. But, I mean, it was fun. Or calendar invite. That's what it was, a calendar invite. Okay. So I know as much as they know, there's still little pieces that, you know. Because I was on some other calls where – they were saying email, email, email. I'm like, my kids don't use email at all. Like, I have to yell at them to, maybe in college they kind of start to get into that habit, but the other kids, it's all Snapchat and everything else. And
well, that's the other piece of coaching. Give them some coaching as well.
Okay.
Is that everything you write, first of all, writing skills are more important than ever because everything is written. If you think
and they're
about
lacking.
It. In email, yes. And that's one of the things where students are, many students can use work, and I'll tell them that you're spending a lot of money on your education. Work on your writing skills that will help you keep a job.
Right.
You can get a diploma and you can get a job, but you have to keep a job.
Yeah.
And so you want to be sure your writing skills are up to par, because that will make the difference often between keeping a job. If they have to make a decision around who to lay off, you're going to want the person with the best skills.
Yeah.
And so I coach them on that. And also to be very careful. Everything is kept. Right?
online
and
easily circulated.
You want to be very professional in your writing, and not like communicating with your peers in a text. You need to know that everything can and will be used in a court of law should it need to be. So be careful and write your documents, whatever it is, very professionally, whether it's a text or a voicemail or an email, everything.
Yeah, I wonder about that because I notice things all the time. I just have that eye that I see typos and misspellings and out of context and stuff on websites and everything. I was like, well, maybe people just don't care anymore because there's just so much out there. But I would hope it still matters, but I don't know.
I think it matters.
In the corporate world.
Yes, absolutely. It helped me keep a job.
Good for you. Well, like I said, I see it on people have their websites up and their professional websites, and there's typos and, you know, lacking. And I mean, I know sometimes when you're in a hurry or you don't, or if you're proofreading something for the 100th time, you miss stuff, right?
Yes,
you know,
exactly.
So I get how it happens. It just doesn't seem like anyone else pays that much attention, but maybe they do.
It does. People do, especially once you get into business and you have to write contracts or proposals.
Well, contracts, that's a big deal.
Or presentations. I mean, you want things to be right.
Yeah. I mean, I even notice things. Well, it's funny because I went to a Princeton event for the chamber, and this guy, and he owns this huge corporation, and he's super smart and all this other stuff. And he did this presentation, and it was very thorough and very good and entertaining, but there were a couple of typos that spell check would not find.
Yes.
So
jump,
I mean,
off the page, don't they?
Well, to me, and so I emailed the contact. I said, just so you know, I mean, I'm not questioning his intelligence or his anything, because he's obviously amazing at what he does, but just if he wants to add that professional and maybe, you know, but spell check wouldn't catch this stuff because it was more context errors. And so here's my two cents on that, just to help out. But, you know, you could ignore me if you want. But that's one thing that I like to notice and point out, not to be mean, but just to improve things.
Yes, absolutely.
So.
Well, in fact, each student's memo is graded. I use track changes in Word what is an editing tool.
Okay.
And I will go through and edit each of their assignments and give them feedback, and points come off. And I tell them that grammar, punctuation, spelling are really important. So read, proofread.
Well, and have somebody else proofread it, because, yes, like, again, if you're looking at it for the 18th time, you're just, yes, you won't catch it because you're just fatigued, right?
Yes, and sometimes print it out. I'll find it on paper more.
I still like to see things printed, so it's better for me.
Yes.
Yes. So you have their core group of about 63 volunteers, did you say?
It's dwindled.
Okay.
There are a handful of us now because there isn't quite as much to do, because the buildings are being vacated completely. And okay, so there are a handful of us who are collecting the supplies, because we'll be getting more supplies as the building gets emptied out of people. People are moving to a different location. Mm-hmm. So.
And have you kept in touch with people? Because you said a lot of people were either retiring like yourself, or some got laid off and different things. So have you been able to do you meet quarterly for lunch or keep in touch with everybody?
We've been meeting over supplies and furniture, if anything.
Okay, well, it works. Yeah.
And we've talked about trying to do something once, you know, staying in touch with each other once we finish the donations, yeah, at this facility. And then I thought about continuing this at Fairley, because when students leave their dorms at the end of the year, they leave a lot of stuff behind
that the school
has to dispose of. So I'm going to do some outreach at the school to see if there's a way we could start to collect those things and get a student program together of volunteers to donate those things to local charities or
that'd
whomever.
Amazing. Yeah, so, well, and the Morristown Soup Kitchen's right there and everything else. I mean, there's so much. And, well, I mean, do the RAs or somebody have to check off the room that it's cleaned out, or they just leave it at the end of the hallway and dump it? Or, yeah, because a lot of times, too, you'd think the next student's coming in that, you know, because my son's getting ready to go away for college, and just, you know, buying all the bedding and this and that. I mean, it's sort of and it's perfectly good for other people to pass. I mean, you want to wash and all that stuff, but I mean, there's like all kinds of shelving or anything, you know, school. Yeah, that would be good.
Yeah, so I have to find out more about what's left and talk to people there. It's just sort of, at this point, it's sort of an idea right now. I don't have the time for it, but once we're finished here.
Right. So do you see an end in sight for this whole?
I think, yes,
okay,
I do, because the whole complex is closing down. They've moved the folks to they'll be moving the folks to a different location at the end of June.
Mm-hmm.
So once we're done there, I would think that'll be the end there.
Okay. Has there another company bought the complex, or is it?
No, they've just decided to move out of the complex because it is, parts of it are up for sale. And
okay,
I think it's in it's a core piece of Piscataway that they're looking at redeveloping and redesigning.
Wow.
So they're moving people to a different site.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. Well, that's good. How about any of your other cohorts that have gone on to volunteer with other organizations or
people? Yes. So the Pioneers have a very volunteer spirit. There's one person, Jackie Gunn in particular, she lives a life of volunteerism.
I need to have her on the show.
She'd be delightful. She's a wonderful woman. She volunteers for the Pioneers. She's done all our statistics, tracking of all our statistics.
Oh.
She sends letters out to every nonprofit to whom we've donated to say, here's what's been donated. And so she's just amazing. And she isn't donating her time to the furniture. She donates to the polo event that happened in Pittstown this past week, to the New Jersey Shakespeare Theater. So she lives a life of volunteerism. She's just an amazing woman.
Sounds like my kind of person.
Yes.
I will definitely have to have her on, because,
awesome.
I mean, she embodies that life, right? And she's probably having a ball, right?
She does. She's just optimistic, positive, helpful, professional. You couldn't ask for a better person.
Oh, no. And did she work with you at Erickson?
Yes.
She's retired now, too.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Cool. Well, that's why I just tell people. I said it really is addictive and infectious when you start volunteering and you start meeting people and you're doing good. And it's just, you know, you're in your happy place. Mm-hmm. And it really breeds all kinds of connection, community, socialism, doing good, being happy, right?
Yes. And then my friends, Tom West and Brenda Overcash, who are married, they volunteer their time collecting metal and scrapping it, selling for scrap, and then they donate all the money to cystic fibrosis.
They've
worked like full-time collecting metal and scrap metal and donating it.
That's incredible. Yeah. So it sounds like you've got a whole list of people that I can call to populate the
you
show.
Do. I do.
I know,
yes.
Right? Yeah, and well, we were talking that, so you called me because I think for Room to Read, a Room to Read connection, and you thought maybe Room to Read would need office supplies, but I'm more of a virtual office because all of our programs are in Asia and Africa. But also, I had the show, and I started blasting out emails to all my past guests from the show, and several, what you got for Moms Helping Moms. Yes. I think you got them out of the dumpster.
They got chairs. They got chairs
for their conference room. Yes. And what is it? IU, I forget, a couple in Princeton. I don't know. I think there was, because I said, oh my gosh, this is incredible. And I just blasted out to different people I knew. So yes, that worked out well.
Yes. Because in the beginning, I thought the Pioneers had a big list of nonprofits. Well, they have a handful of nonprofits that they work with. So then the question became, well, how do we find more? So I went to the employees, so people found organizations, and then I went to the web. Like when it came to the furniture, it was like, okay, we'll send to the list of people we have. Uh-huh. And then I went and went to nonprofits in Hunterdon County and came up with a list of nonprofits. I started calling everybody.
Yeah, nice.
And that's how I thought, oh, Room to Read, that sounds like a library. She probably could use some bookcases.
I know, that's a misnomer because all the books are overseas, but that's okay. Like we've done a lot of creative things with that. And Sweet Reads was on the show, and sweetreads.org, and they are local here, and they take books and collect them and then share them with other communities. And she's doing a great job, Tamiko Hubbard. So there's, you know, just one thing leads to another, and usually between this network, you find they get to where they need to be. Mm-hmm. That's the good thing. And I think it's called New Jersey Center for Nonprofits has over 10,000 nonprofits listed on there. Yeah, yeah,
okay.
Yeah. So there's definitely resources out there. It's just like you said, or we said, making the connection, and they're out there. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back.
Rab Coins of Flemington, New Jersey has been in business for over 40 years. We are highly competitive buyers of gold, silver, and platinum coins, jewelry, and scrap metals, and have recently been named the exclusive gold buyer for Diamond Nation and HealthQuest. We also provide professional appraisals, sales and liquidation services for individuals, law firms, estate trustees, and bank trust departments in New Jersey and Philadelphia. Products and services include gold and silver, American and foreign coins, certified rare date and modern coins, numismatic supplies and books, gold, silver, and platinum bullion, paper currency, United States proof and mint sets, including current issues. From junior collector to the experienced investor, RabCoin has been for the industry since 1974. Founder and owner Randy Block has been an expert and an active member of the coin industry for over 45 years. Visit us at 56 Main Street in historic downtown Flemington or call toll-free 1-800-819-9875.
The traffic is stuck. Max Living, brought to you by the Max Challenge of Clinton, New Jersey. Join me, your host, Mark LaRose, every Wednesday at 1 p.m. right here on Hunterdon Chamber Radio. I'll be discussing important health and fitness subjects, featuring guests and success stories. We are here to help motivate you. It's a beautiful day.
When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provides sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care at a moment's notice. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody out there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in? Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Good morning. You're listening to Happy to Help. I'm Nicole Smith, your host, and today I'm talking to Larry O'Donnell, who is a dumpster diving diva. She has a trash passion, and she saved tons and tons of office furniture, office supplies, and metal, and all kinds of things from the landfill because she saw a need in her company, Ericsson, when they were transitioning to a paperless office, and they called it the Big Sweep, and they saved over 290 tons of office supplies, equipment, and office furniture from being dumped into a landfill, e-wasted, or ground for recycling. Instead, these items were donated to 274 nonprofits, 132 volunteers, employees, and retirees, Many members of the Pioneers Chapter 99 volunteered 25,000 hours and cleaned out office supplies and furniture from several buildings in Piscataway and shipped them all over to the tri-state area, as far away as Haiti and Liberia, Puerto Rico and Belize, to have a second life or continued life in helping other people. So bravo.
Thank you. In fact, the number has gone up because the statistics that you have are from last September.
Okay.
And so they don't include a lot of furniture that we've been donating. Okay. So we are well over 400 tons of office supplies, equipment, and furniture, but there are now 20-some tractor trailers, as I mentioned before, full of furniture that have not been factored into any of the numbers yet. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to be interested to see just how much that really equals. It's a lot of stuff.
I wonder how many football fields that is for the sports fans out there. I don't know. Somebody can do a math calculation for us.
So. Good question. Well, some of the desks are turned on their side. So even
I love it. And so you've still got a few more things to give out. So I want to get that information out to people. And so what are you giving away and how do they get it?
Okay. So we have some office supplies to donate to nonprofits and schools. And so the kinds of things we have are binders, we have some tab sets, we have some rolling mail carts, we have some paper and a few staplers, hole punches, a variety of office supply kinds of things. I have an order form that I can send out or give you an email address to send if you're interested.
Okay, yeah, well, tell everybody what that email address is.
Okay, it's Pioneers Furniture Sale. @gmail.com. So Pioneers, Pioneers, furniture, like the word, and then sale.com.
At gmail.com. Okay.
And so if you just send me an email and let me know that you'd like an order form, I'll send it to you. The time frame we have is tight. It's always tight. That's been one of our biggest challenges, is to do things in the time frame that meets the company's needs.
Move it or lose it, right?
Exactly. And I'm not of the lose it kind.
Good for you.
I like to get it out.
Yeah.
And so I'll get you an order form. You'd have to come to Piscataway and pick it up at the Erickson site, and we coordinate that.
Exit 8 off 287.
Yes. Yeah. And so I can send the order form out, but things that will need to be picked up by the end of June.
Okay. So what is it? PioneersFurnitureSale at gmail.com.
You got it.
So if you've got maybe teachers, and I know all the school years are winding down, so teachers probably would just want to throw everything away and go to the beach, but maybe you should stock up for next year, or you'll have time to sort through some things or figure out what you need. So anybody that knows teachers out there that need things, or nonprofits that need office supplies, a starting nonprofit, or someone joining a new office space or helping a nonprofit, so get the word out, share it, and I will share it more on Facebook when I'll make a list later and put the email address out there too.
And we do ask that you sign a waiver as well as provide your nonprofit form to show that you're a current legitimate nonprofit organization.
That makes sense. And then y'all should reach out to New Jersey Nonprofit. So I'll give you that website
too. That'd be great.
So yeah, that would be great. And what else do we have? Do you teach classes in the summer or only during the year?
12 months of the year.
Oh.
I've got interns 12 months of the year.
Oh. And so are they interns at?
They're interning at local companies around the Morristown area. Although I have had students who live out of state. Mm-hmm. And so over the summer, they may have their internship at a local to their home. Mm-hmm. And so what we do is I have WebEx meetings with the students.
Okay.
And so we do our five classes. I have five classes with the interns over the course of the internship. So
do you have any fun intern stories about questions that surprised you or made you laugh or just thought were insightful from any of your interns or anybody that impressed you?
Well, one that was kind of sad and funny. So a student gets an assignment and I said, well, here's where you go to find this information. So he gets the information. He says, well, what now? I said, read it. read it. And then what is it telling you? So it's interesting. Some students know what to do, but some are like, okay, now what?
Well, I know. It's the taskmasters, right? I have to, tell me each step of the way. But, I mean, everyone's different, right?
Everybody's different. Their internships are unique. Some students have never worked before. They've done babysitting. So now this is a step into the business world. Mm-hmm. So it's a different environment. And they're They've all had very positive experiences. So that's been really good to
that's
see.
Right.
Okay. Occasionally, I've had a student get fired. Not often, but I do go through that with them in the beginning to say, here are the things students get fired for.
Yeah, no, well, what are those so people can watch out for that?
In some cases, students are not dressed professionally.
Oh.
Especially in different companies are different, different industries are different. So finance, banking, people are more business traditional, formal, ties, jackets.
Okay.
Student walked in with his shirt hanging out. They let him go. They didn't even let him stay.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Didn't even let him stay. So that was one reason. One student's writing skills were not good enough.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, we don't have the time to redo the work.
Yeah.
So we have to let them go. And one student just decided he wasn't going to finish an assignment he was given. And he would finish it when he got back from vacation and said, told the supervisor, oh, I'll do this when I get back. So they had to let him go.
Oh, my gosh.
And so I go through those things with the students to say, this doesn't happen often, but I'm going to go through it with you just so you've heard the word.
Yes.
And they're sometimes surprised that anybody got fired.
Yeah, dose of reality.
But it does happen.
Yeah.
So it's important to stay on top of things. The other thing is something that's very different from business to school is projects. And I've started asking students this question. So if you get a project that's a month-long project from your professor, and it's you get it June 1st and it's due on June 30th, do you ever give them an update on the status of the project? And the answer is no, which is what I would have expected. But I said, well, work is very different because we're getting feedback from management that managers need to be updated on the status of your work. You don't wait until the last minute to say, I need help. And it's not seen as a negative if you say you need help.
Right.
In fact, it's a negative if you don't say you need help. So it's important to have ongoing communications with regard to the status of your project, whether you're on track and you can say I'm good, or whether you have a question or anything, just communicate about the status of your work so people know how to be sure it gets done and gets done well on time.
Yeah, well, hopefully that goes both ways, because the different statistics I have read about millennials is they want feedback from their managers 24/7. Feedback, feedback, feedback. How am I doing? You know, so you would think it would reciprocate where I'm giving you feedback on my project and I expect you to give me feedback on my progress. So, I mean, I don't know. But, every situation is different. So,
I think part of it is they're not accustomed to doing it. They've not really had to do that.
Yeah.
Right? Because if you're working on your assignment, and it's due in the morning, you're working till 3 in the morning on it and slapping it together to get it out and give it to the professor. That works, but that doesn't work in a work environment.
Yeah, well, I guess when I was growing up, that was just understood. Like, you know, there's things in college where you can pull an all-nighter, but you're not going to do that at work because the stakes are a little bit higher. I mean, when you're doing it for yourself, it affects your grades and yourself, but when you're doing it for a company, there's a lot more people affected by it.
Absolutely.
Like being on a team or, that's, oh my gosh, that's funny. I love stories like that. But you have hope that the kids want to do well and they're communicating and they're working hard. And
yep, they need coaching, but I see them being very hardworking and often working multiple jobs.
Well, I know it's. Well, my big thing is I think getting a job as a high school student is one of the best things you can do to prepare. And I'm hoping to have the woman that runs teenjobsnj.com on, because she's out of Chatham and she does all these, she posts all these jobs and different things that kids can do. And I think that's one place where you learn how to deal with people, how to deal with deadlines, how to make change. It's just little skills that build your confidence that get you ready for the work world later on.
Absolutely.
So, I don't know. We'll see. So, any other words of advice that you have for people to get out there and volunteer, or people with kids that are in college or about to go to college or graduate college? What's one thing you would tell them as an instructor to have them work on?
Stay focused, work hard, try different things. Internships are really good because you can dip your toe in the water and decide whether or not that career path is good for you, because in the end, you want a job.
Right. That's the goal.
And that's the goal. Make money, support yourself, be a good, active member of society, participating, contributing. And so the internships are just a really valuable way to decide. Because I've had students say, now that I've done this, I know I don't want to do it.
Yeah.
As an occupation, which is, that's a wonderful thing to learn early on in your life. especially the earlier the better, so you can make mid-course corrections if you need to take different classes, because you don't want a degree and you get out and you say, I hate this job, and I just spent, what, $200,000 to get this education, and now I don't want to do this.
Amen to that, right? Yeah. Sometimes it's a process of elimination. You know, Maybe you don't know what you want to do, but you know what, you find out what you don't want to do.
Yes. The other thing is that I found is that students aren't aware of the fact there are websites out there that can help you understand what a job is like. The Bureau of Labor and Statistics has the Occupational Outlook Handbook, which has lists of jobs. It's wonderful. It tells you what the job is like, the skills that are required, the training that's required, the salary ranges, the starting salaries, career path, and it's free because it's published by the government. It's BL Occupational Handbook Outlook. If you just put that in, or Occupational Outlook Handbook, it'll come up to a Bureau of Labor and Statistics website. It's phenomenal. And it actually has links to jobs. So
Perfect. It's
something to help students be aware of, and all of us, if you decide you want to do something differently.
Yeah, there's a lot of people in the career change mode, too.
Yes.
So, yeah. All right, Larry O'Donnell, Dumpster Diving Diva, thank you for all your inspiration and all the work that you do. And it was lovely having you today.
And thank you, Nicole. It's been a privilege and a delight.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's physician referral service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
Another reprieve granted to the last remaining abortion clinic in the state of Missouri. A judge says that Planned Parenthood facility in St. Louis can stay open for now. A Planned Parenthood doctor there, Colleen McNicholas, says,
the fact that we are here before you today to proclaim this temporary victory is a testament to the fight that we will continue, that our entire community will continue to have access to abortion.
The judge also ruling that the state's Department of Health and Senior Services must decide on the license renewal for the facility no later than Friday, June 21st. Donald Trump Jr. currently meeting with the Senate Intelligence Committee behind closed door, his second appearance before that panel in relation to the special counsel Robert Mueller's report on the Russia probe. And you're listening to USA Radio News.
So you sit down and do your budget, and you look at all your monthly costs and your bills and your income, and it seems like there's never quite enough. You know what would really help? Finding $500 a month to help balance things out. That is the typical savings, $500 a month for a family when you switch to MediShare for your health care. And when it comes to health care sharing ministries, MediShare is really the gold standard. It's been around for 25 years and has more than 400,000 members. It's been around so long and grown so much because it works. And whether you're single or married or have kids, this could make sitting down to do a monthly budget a lot more fun. $500 a month can more than cover a car payment or payback loans, whatever. So join MediShare and go out to dinner to celebrate. Here's the number to call. They are incredibly kind and helpful to talk to. 833-34-BIBLE. That's 833-34-BIBLE. 833-34-BIBLE.
A Democratic-controlled House panel now considering a contempt of Congress resolution against Attorney General Bill Barr and Commerce Chief Wilbur Ross. The oversight panel's been demanding more documents from Barr and Ross in a growing dispute over the 2020 census about the Trump administration's decision to put a controversial citizenship question on the census. Comedian Jon Stewart pleading with lawmakers to reauthorize a fund that provides health care to 9/11 first responders. Stewart giving emotional testimony at a Capitol Hill hearing.
They showed us what was so worthy of our country, why it was so important for us to fight back. And I feel like I can never repay that.
The fund providing benefits to first responders and others dealing with illnesses related to the 2001 attacks is running short of money. Stewart angry that more lawmakers did not attend that hearing yesterday. Today marks the 25th anniversary of the murder of O.J. Simpson's wife, Nicole Brown Simpson, and her friend, Ron Goldman. And this is USA Radio News.
With a recession ending, if you've been putting off building your business, now is the time to act. General Steel will meet or beat any price on a pre-engineered steel building of the same size and specifications. Act now before steel prices go up. So call us today for free information.
Call 800-965-1290. 800-965-1290. 800-965-1290.
Acting Homeland Security Chief Kevin McAleen and warning Congress of an unprecedented crisis at the southern border. During a Senate hearing yesterday, he said government border facilities are overflowing and resources are being stretched too thin, and that migrant kids are especially at risk. McAleen also noted that smugglers are making large amounts of money moving people across the border, often in very dangerous conditions. The British government announcing an ambitious plan to cut greenhouse gas emissions to nearly zero by 2050, making Britain the first G7 nation to set such a target. The interim Minister for Energy and Clean Growth is Chris Skidmore.
We've decided it's really important as a government we show leadership. We're really keen internationally to show leadership as well. We're